All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back with the great Roy Red for another edition of Business with Roy live on Eagle FM. And we had some good feedback from our episode last week. We touched on a whole lot of topics, actually, but the one that a lot of people have been getting back to me on is about the information, the food that we feed our brains primarily through books. And lucky for us, we're joined by a six-time best-selling author, so I thought it would be a good idea to run through Roy's books. We'll start at the very first one and all the way to the last one, and we'll talk about why these books are important to read, what they do for the mind, and how they help us in the world of business. But first, Roy, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, man. I was a little angry the last couple of days with, you know, all the Epstein files releasing, and just reading them and finding out all this stuff was kind of disheartening. But other than that, business is going good. Content is going good. I'm excited you guys are liking, what we're putting down. So hopefully we can just continue to bring value so you guys can actually get real world results.
100%. There was some names I didn't expect to see in those files, but we'll leave that for another day. So yeah, let's get right into it with the books. Let's start with the very first book you wrote. We briefly touched on that during the first episode, but let's dive a little bit deeper into it. Tell us the name of that book, what it's about, why people should read it, and what gems can people pick up from this book?
So the book is The Success Magnet, The Five Values That Attract Success. And even though the book is titled The Success Magnet, it's really a book written about self-expression and how there's five values that if you cultivate them, that you will create an identity in yourself that will attract results. I know we like to use this word attract, but I want you to start thinking of the world as inputs and outputs. There's two types of inputs. There's what you read, what you listen to, anything that is impressed on your nervous system. And then there's also inputs of what you put out into the world. So what you say, how you talk, what actions you put out. If we want to get nerdy, we can go into the quantum physics of it. Everything is just sound. At the beginning, there was the word, right? Everything is just sound. And we're creating sound with our voice. We're creating sound with our inner dialogue. And we're creating sound with our actions. And those sounds vibrate and create a result. And so I was inspired to write this book after starting my first business and just sharing things that my mentor shared with me, how to think about your money, the cost, the risk, if you're going to be an entrepreneur or a business person, and how to look at things so that you can go to where you want to go in anything. Physically, are you physically prepared? You know, there's two things that highly successful people have. They have a ton of energy. And if you notice anyone you ever met that's been crushing it, they always have a lot of energy. And the number two is they're very organized. So this book gives you the input you need, tells you exactly what to do so you have the energy and the organization so that you can achieve whatever it is you want to achieve.
100%. And have people like contacted you about this book, about what they've picked up from this book and how it's helped them in their journeys?
Yeah. So this book actually is my most sold. It's funny. It's my first one's the most sold. So many reviews and comments from people. You know, you got the haters, but we need them too. We love haters because it is talk good about me or talk bad about me. As long as you're talking, as long as you're giving me your attention.
Yeah.
But then we helped a lot of people in life, people hitting me up. That was actually how I met a NBA skills trainer who brought me in to work with my first pro athlete after reading the book. He was very interested in the mind side. Like, how can we create identities, create mindsets, create inputs so that his athlete could play on another level? Because you're really good at something. If you're a fighter, businessman, athlete, anything. Everyone's good at the top level, but what separates people at the top level is their mentality, right?
Yeah.
Are you confident? Are you chasing your goals with bold enthusiasm? Are you just so locked in and so focused that you're going to beat the person next to you? And I tell people all the time, there's people who are better than me at a lot of things, but I still beat them because I have what's called a forced multiplier. And a forced multiplier is something that takes something and it makes it 10 times better. The force multiplier for us human beings is focus. But what are you going to focus on? You can't be everything to everybody and you can't have everything, but you can be one thing to everybody or two things to everybody. So this book lays out how to focus. And I flew up to work with that NBA player and we showed him how to focus and we found out what things were in his way mentally and we removed those things. And he was better in his career for that. And I think it just, you know, made him a whole better human being in totality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So would you say there's a like a direct correlation between inputs and outputs for human beings?
It's sowing and reaping. I actually was inspired to write, and we'll talk about my last book, but the Bible talks about sowing and reaping. Anything you input, there's going to be an output. There's cause and effect in the universe, right? And so if you input something and you don't get the output you desire, then you know that it's always the input that needs to change. You don't need to change. You could be yourself, but what actions are you putting out there? What are you putting into your mind? What are your beliefs? Some people have beliefs that keep them from ever achieving what they want to achieve. One of those beliefs is money is the root of all evil. That's not true. They didn't read that part of the story correctly. And so if you have the input that money is the root of all evil, why would your subconscious mammalian brain ever work hard to make money, right? And so it's always starts here. It's 90% here, 10% everything else. And if you can get control of your inputs, you can get control of yourself because you have a choice of what you put into your brain.
100%, 100%. And speaking of things that you put into your brain, I mean, we're talking about books now, but is there other, whether it's piece of content, maybe music, I don't know, of things that you can put in your brain that can help you in life and in the field of business?
Yes. Everything. It's literally everything. What you eat. It's funny. I was reading this book about CIA operatives. They don't let CIA operatives eat processed foods. Because they know what processed foods can do for you. They make them eat a certain way. Like their breakfast is 3 eggs and a cup of blueberries and water. Mm-hmm. Right? So they know, you have to know that what you put in yourself is the gasoline that's going to drive the car of which you are. And so everything matters. Music is huge because in the mental game, it's all about certainty. Right? Mm-hmm. If you have certainty that you can achieve something, you're going to go do it. But if you're not really sure, you may not do it. And in the book, we talk about how faith means certainty. Certainty in what is not yet been done. Certainty in what you have not seen. And the way you build certainty is with your inputs. The more inputs you have, it's going to make you more certain. And I read something in a book recently. It said rhythm is certainty. So what rhythms are you putting in your head? What are you listening to? There's a certain bass in a lot of songs that we like called, it's a drum called the 808. That is a very low vibration. And if you actually, to geek out, if you actually look at your vagus nerve, it's also called the wandering nerve. It's like a big harp string. And they've done studies. If you put two violins together and you hit one string on the violin, the same exact string on the other violin will also start to vibrate. We are the same way with our nerves. The people are around. What are you saying? I'll give one last story to bring this point home is when Mary knew she was having Jesus, the story says she traveled far to go tell someone from far away. And I kept thinking, like, why would she go tell? Like, you know, we get an idea. We tell our family. We tell our friends. We tell the people around us. The reason why she tells someone else is because people who don't have a vision don't understand. So she went to tell someone else who also had a vision and a calling. And it says that when she told this person that, the baby jumped with joy in her belly. So when you get an idea, who are you telling? If you tell someone who's going to hate on you or be like, ah, even if they say good things, you can feel it when you know they don't really believe you. And that input acts on you and takes away your certainty. So you want to be around people who's going to bring certainty. You want to be around environments that's going to bring certainty. And you want to play rhythms in your head that's going to bring certainty. And so be mindful of what you listen to, who you listen to, and never be around those people until your certainty is so strong, there's nothing they could say to knock you off course.
100%. Now, let's move on to the second book that you wrote. Give us the title and the gems from that one.
What was the second book? Oh, the second book was The Little Book of Mental Health. So
Mental Health?
Mental Health, yeah. I was inspired to write a mental health book just because we're having a mental health crisis, especially here in America. We're not going to get into everything, but people are crazy. And so I wanted to break down, addiction, drugs, and where all mental problems come from. And I talked about this on a podcast the other day. You can break down all mental issues to loss, less, or never. We're depressed about losing something or having less of something, or we have anxiety about never achieving something. And so you lose someone or something that was attached to you, you get sad. You get the concept of depressed. And if you have less of something, you get that as well. And then if you think you're never going to achieve something, like, Hinde, have you ever been going towards a goal and you're just up at night, you can't sleep, and you're just grinding, trying to figure out that key, trying to figure out that puzzle piece? That's the anxiety that moves you towards action. And so we break that down in the book. We break down how to think about these things, how to move forward, because our nervous system, when we are posed with a threat, we either fight, flight, or we freeze. And the point of the book is to teach you to never freeze, because when you freeze is when you get all of these emotions that really beat you down. Those emotions are there. They're signals so that you take action. But if you freeze, you're not taking action. And so in the book, I call it trapped energy. And so a lot of people have trapped energy. And if you could just release that trapped energy, then you're going to have enough energy to get so much done. It's like a bear chasing you. You can run fast, jump high, and just do what you have to do to survive. We feel those same emotions with all threats, not just physical.
And these are all, basically what I'm getting from you is these are all like roadblocks that we created for ourselves mentally, essentially. It's not something that, like a roadblock someone put in front of you. It's all self-created, essentially.
It's all self-created. Well, where our identity is built from ages 1 to 7. And in those 7 years, we create what we call in the book life sentences. So for example, here's a life sentence. Let's say you're maybe a little older, you're a kid, you have a girlfriend. Let's say that girlfriend, she's, and then you say, all girls are bad and all girls cheat. That is a life sentence that you created, an idea that's not true. But now you're going to act in the world in the way where you'll never trust girls again, because you took on a life sentence idea that flat out just isn't true. And we take a lot of those, we create a lot of those when we're kids from ages 1 to 7, from the simplest things. And so what a good life coach does, or what a good mental person does, is he finds out what those life sentences, what those blocks are, and he takes you through a process to make you realize you made that decision when you were a kid, but you're not a kid anymore. And it's okay to heal, and it's okay to move forward and do what you need to do to be successful.
Yeah, most definitely. And you wrote this book what year?
I want to say maybe 2018 to 20, somewhere between there. Not totally positive.
Before the pandemic.
I think right before the pandemic, yeah. I took a lot of haters A lot of haters doing that one. Because I didn't have my psychology degree at the time, but I just understood this stuff and I know how to apply it. I know applied psychology really well. So you have people who know the words and what things mean, and then you have people who actually know how to use it. I know how to actually use it.
Yeah, most of them. Do you know, you heard of Wallow?
The Gillies brother?
Yeah. Yeah, he always says, haters are your marketing team. Let them work.
Yep, 1,000%. Because then people see it and then they start. And it's funny because at the time, someone who was actually a psychologist reached out through channels and said that I didn't know what I was talking about and I was dumb. And I have this thing where when someone tries to stop me doing something, I look at that as the devil trying to keep a blessing from me. As you know, I was just writing it because I was inspired. But then when I got that feedback that, oh, you don't know what you're doing, I was like, you know what? I really need to execute this now because he said that. Because, you know, I'm a big believer. The Bible says that God takes the stupid things to prove the wise wrong. And so a lot of times he sends things that you wouldn't never expect to change the world. And that was my second most sold book. And it took people from having suicidal thoughts to now having great lives. I had a girl who read it and she was really in a bad place. And now she has a beautiful family. I had a friend of mine who had the plan to end. He had a plan to end his life. And now he's, you know, thriving and hit all his goals. And so at the end of the day, that's what really matters.
Most definitely. Now let's move on to the third one. The third book you wrote, what was that one called?
That one was, it was a performance book. It was about integrity. And
okay,
the whole premise of the book was without integrity, nothing works. And so I had this idea. Because I was reading a dictionary, and I like to go into the etymology of words, like where they came from and how words started. So, for example, we have a lot of words that mean things that didn't mean what they meant when the word was invented. Mm-hmm. And if you go to the Greek concordance, every word has a number on it so that you can't change the meaning of it. And I remember reading about integrity. And integrity has nothing to do with morality. Integrity actually means to be whole, complete, and undivided. And so when I wrote the secret thing that's helping your performance, I wrote it on the premise of integrity. So if you look at like a bicycle wheel, like a wheel, if you start to take the spokes out of the middle, eventually that wheel won't roll, right?
Yeah.
When it loses integrity, it won't work. So then I thought to myself, well, what makes a human being work? What is the thing that keeps us in integrity? And then I realized it was our words. Integrity of word is what's going to make you perform at a high level. So let's substantiate this idea. Let's say I have an athlete who tells himself he's going to make the last shot. And remember, we talk about certainty is what you need as an athlete, right? So I'm going to make the game winning shot. But let's say the night before he said he was going to wash the dishes and he didn't. Every time you say to yourself you're going to do something and you don't do it, it weakens your ability to manifest. Because your own nervous system and your own brain thinks you're lying because you said you're going to do something and you didn't do it. So now you're saying you're going to do something. We're not going to do it, right? And so we call that integrity of word. And in that book, The Secret Requirement for High Performance, I talk about exalting your word. When you give your word, you need to do what you said you were going to do and you need to do it on time.
Yeah.
But Hinde, there's times that we don't do what we said we're going to do, right? Here's the key. When the moment you know you're not going to be able to do something you gave your word to, You need to explicitly give your word that you're not going to be able to do it. And then you need to fix it and then pick a later time when you're going to do it. So if he said he was going to wash the dishes and then he didn't have time to do it, he said he needs to exalt that and make that energy whole again by saying, okay, I'll do it tomorrow at this time. And I promise you, when you get to the level that you actually execute on everything you say, I'm going to go to the gym every day, and then you go, you get superpowers. I have superpowers. I can say I'm going to do something I've never done before, but I have this level of certainty from power built up of always having integrity that I just execute.
Yeah.
And I'll give a story on that. I work out every day. And at this point, when I told someone I could bench 315, which is 345 plates on each side, I said I could, and I never had done it before. And so technically, when you give your word to something and you're not sure if you could do it, technically that's what they call lying, right? Yeah. But it's always a lie until you do it. And so I told him I could do it, and then he said I couldn't, and we had a little bet. And even though I never did it, I had no thought that I couldn't do it. I just knew that I could do it because I had built up that power in myself. And so I went out there and I benched 315 for the first time. And so when you giving your word to things is magical. If you want to build that $1 million business, if you want to get that girl for that relationship, if you want to get fit, you need to start making your word whole and complete. And the way you start doing that is you want to make a list of everything you said you were going to do that you didn't do. And you need to go fix all that. If you told someone you're going to do something, you didn't do it. When I first did this process, it seems weird. I'll hit up someone that I haven't talked to in a year and be like, hey, remember I said I was going to do this? I just want to apologize saying that I said that. I'm going to actually do it now. And make that whole and complete. And when you do that in your life and start to fix all the things you said you were going to do and you didn't do, it makes you super powerful overnight. And then from there, you just need to be careful what you give your word to. Because if you're not going to do it, it's okay to say no. But a lot of us say, yeah, I'll do that. And then we don't do it, but that weakens you. And so that book was all about integrity of word. And I actually love that book because that was the same speech I gave at Stanford about this stuff. And if you want to see that, you could YouTube Roy Red Stanford talk and you can watch that talk.
Yeah, I'm gonna look that up for sure. And for the listeners, 315 pound is 170 kilograms.
Yeah.
It's a lot of weight you're moving there. And, so basically what I'm getting from you is that, procrastination is like, it's something that impacts you like in life. If you procrastinate, it's poison basically.
Yeah. It literally weakens you. Like your nervous system hates it, and your nervous system needs, you need to trust yourself. That's what this book does. It teaches you how to trust yourself.
Yeah. And, okay, that was the third book. Now on to the fourth book you wrote. What was that one called?
That was The Six-Figure Trainer. The Six-Figure Trainer was, it's funny. This is a funny story. I actually had some tax problems, maybe in 2021, and I needed a product to sales because I needed money to pay taxes. And so I'm really good at this. I can, write a book, get on stages and sell something. So I created this project for trainers, teaching them how to sell their training because I had access to a lot of trainers. So I wrote The Six-Figure Trainer. I put some secrets in there on how they can close deals immediately. Mm-hmm. And then I created a class called The Six-Figure Trainer where I promised people that if they pay that they would that day in the class, make a sale and that would pay for the class itself. And so we had a few people come down. I wrote the book. I gave the book out. made the book a bestseller. Actually, that book sold a lot. It picked up a lot in India as well. We taught people exactly how they can build their training business and make money. And they made sales immediately with a process I call the six-figure text message. And so basically every one of you have people in your phone who will buy your product and services. You just aren't reaching out the correct way. And so we teach in that book how you can reach out, how you can close sales immediately. You can get, some people could get up to 5, 10, 15, 20 clients immediately. And then we show how to keep doing that ongoing and how to sell and how to talk using what we call the collaborative close, where instead of trying to tell people how great you are as a trainer, you just ask them like, okay, let's say you're trying to lose weight, Hende. I just say, okay, how long have you been trying to lose weight? Oh, I've been off and on at the eaters, but I can't stay consistent. Oh, okay. All right. What have you tried? Oh, I tried keto. Okay. Then you say, oh, how is that working? Oh, it didn't really work. And all you're doing is let them tell you all of their problems. And then when they're done telling you all their problems, you just go, okay, good. Because that's exactly what we fix. So when do you want to get started? And then that opens up the selling process and they go, oh, well, how much is it? Da, 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 da. And I just, you tell them how much it is, and the process works very, very well.
Mm-hmm. So now, following up on that, what are some bad ways that people approach trying to close deals?
Mm-hmm. Trying to make it seem like they're smart. Humans have this thing where we want to be right. We call it the ego. We want to be right and we want to sound smart. Just post any fitness stuff online and see how people try to tell you you're dumb or you know what you're talking about. Keto's bad. You need to be vegan. Nobody can agree on how we're supposed to eat and work out, right? There's always arguments, which is fine. Which is fine. What works for you is what works for you. But what we go by is if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And so instead of trying to say how smart you are or show your abs, what you want to do is make it about them. Tell them what's been working, what hasn't been working, how do you feel? Blase, blase. And when it's about them, you do at the end what's called an identity close. Okay. So when you just ask them questions, all you're doing is asking them questions. And you say, good, that's what we fixed. Then when you pitch the price and you pitch it back to them, you can say, let's say they said, I want to lose 10 pounds, but I have this issue with this. You can say, okay, you told me that you're going to lose 10 pounds and you had an issue with eating sweets and this fixes that. So when do you want to get started? So now for them to not take your product and service or say no, they're basically saying no to what they said. So it will go against them being right. We call this an identity squeeze. So they never want to be wrong to themselves. So this is why those people who won't get an iPhone and they just keep Android forever. This is like those people. They just want to be congruent with what they said. They'll always buy when they go against themselves.
Now that's interesting. I'm actually curious. Have you ever, like, in your time in business and you're like trying to negotiate with someone, have you ever met someone that basically knows exactly what it is you're trying to do? Like, has someone ever responded to you and be like, oh, I know what you're doing right now. This is an identity squeeze. I'm not going for that.
No, I actually never had that. I know when people are doing things to me, but I don't bring it right up to them. I just kind of play the game with them and maybe go back to them. I would say car salesmen, they know when you're doing certain things, when you're trying to get prices down on cars, but most people don't know this stuff. And what's crazy about the mind is even though you know this stuff, it still works on you because That's just how powerful it is. Like, you know, when someone gives you something for free, they're using the power of reciprocity, right? But you still feel good that they gave you something for free. So even if you know it, it still works.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Now, the fourth one, what was the fourth book, its name also, and the premise of that book?
That was the fourth one. That was The Six-Figure Trainer. That was the fourth one. That was the fourth one, yeah. The fifth one was, I think it's right here, The Victory Equation.
Okay.
How to Win Despite the Odds. That one is all about inputs and outputs. And so the idea is, I use the idea, have you ever heard of lead indicators? So lead indicators are your habits you need to do to achieve a goal. So let's just use to stay on training. Let's just say you're trying to lose weight. If you work out really hard today and then you go get on the scale, you're still going to weigh the same. Okay.
Yeah.
But you know that if you eat less calories for 2 weeks, we know if you're in a calorie deficit of 3,500, you lose a pound. Every pound is about 3,500 calories. And so her lead measure would be 3,500 calories a week. I mean, 3,500 calories less than what you normally eat in a week if you want to lose a pound a week. Okay. So that's knowing your lead measures. So to bring that to business, how many calls do you need to do? How many emails do you need to do? You need to know the exact amount of work you need to put in to guarantee the result. And so what this book does is it teaches you how to figure out what your lead measure is. So that way you can't lose. You know exactly what you need to do. It's literally a formula that teaches you, okay, what's the goal? Boom, I got the goal. Okay, this is how you think through to figure out what your lead measure is. And once you know your lead measure, all you need to focus on is the work, the lead measure, the habits. Don't worry about the result, because the result always comes later. We call that a lag measure. Results are called lag measures. And the reason why we call them lag is because the results come over time. They don't happen overnight. But if you're always on the scale worrying about the weight, it could take you off the focus of what you need to be worrying about, which is the calories. That's why so many athletes say, don't worry about the end result. Focus on the process. Fall in love with the process. And so telling someone to fall in love with the process is a little bit vague and esoteric. But if you tell them, these are your exact lead measures of what you need to do every single day to be the best, then they can do that. And so that's what that book does. It gives the exact equation, the victory equation, that'll get you your lead measures so that you hit the goals that you want.
So, Roy, have you ever consistently done something? You picked up a habit with the end goal in mind, and it just never worked out. Because, like, listening to you speak, it sounds pretty like 1 + 1 = 2. But has the equation ever not worked out for you?
It's never not worked. Because when you're doing the actions, let's say you go to make a lead measure. If the lead measure is correct, you're going to hit the result. But let's say you didn't do the lead measure correct. When you start doing the actions every day, you're going to notice little things that you might have to change, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe when you're working out, maybe you need to drink a little more water. Maybe it's a little less water. And so when you're actually taking action, you notice the little intricate details, the little distinctions that you need to change. And the problem with thinking about things without taking action is you don't notice those things you might need to change unless you take action. That's why I have a rule. When I create something, I get it 80% ready, then I put it out. Whether that's a book, whether that's a program, whether that's anything I'm doing, I make it 80%. And then I put it out. Most people are trying to make it 100% perfect. Oh, it has to be perfect before I put it out. But the problem is you can't make it perfect until you get feedback.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? But the reason why they want to make it perfect is because they care about what other people think about them. Make it 80%, put it out, then keep your eyes open for the feedback. What are people saying? Is this constructive criticism or just haters? What do you notice that you need to change? Maybe you have to do this a little more, maybe a little more cardio, maybe a little more weightlifting. There's always going to be intricate details, intricate little changes. It's always the little changes that make the difference, but you can't even know what those are until you take action. So when you start out on your lead measures, maybe you might change the lead measures a little bit, but not a lot. You know, it's funny, you know, when you're on the airplane and you're going to a destination, you always get to your destination, right? Did you know 99% of the time you're in that airplane, you're actually off course? And the plane is just constantly going back on course. Yeah. You're always off course and it's constantly going back on course, off course. Then it constantly corrects. And you always end up at the right destination. So it's fine. Get on the airplane, chase your goals, and just constantly course correct as you go.
No, that's a good analogy, actually. But now in that course correction, how do you, if you're doing something for the first time, how do you know that the decision you're making to course correct is the right one? Like that you're not going too far off the path to end up somewhere completely different.
This is where we talk about in the book, you want a mentor who's done what you've done already. Because they've done it. They've seen it all. They know what to do. For example, I have a chairman who has been there, done that. He's 60s, 70s year old, and he knows what roll bumps I'm going to hit. And so I recommend everyone to have three types of people in their life. You want a mentor, someone who's been there, done that. Two, you want people on your level who are chasing their goals. And then three, you want people that you're also mentoring. Hindi, the best way to learn is to teach. Mm-hmm. And we're always a little bit better than someone that we can help. And then there's people who are on our level. Those are our peers. And then there's people who are where we want to be. Those are our mentors. You want those three people in your life. And that is your, should be your social circle.
Most definitely. And, onto book, the final book. With what's that title?
That one is Built to Exit. So as you know, man, I'm buying businesses. I have a roll up, but I can also help business owners sell their business at a higher level. A lot of business owners think, oh, I've been working this business 5, 10, 15, 20 years, but I make a lot of money, so someone should buy it for a lot of money. But it doesn't work that way. Your business has to be what we call exit ready. And
okay.
This book teaches you exactly what you need to do, the 8-step blueprint to scale, systemize, and sell your business for top dollar. So if you want to, if you're ready to retire or you want to sell a business and exit, this shows you how to do it for top dollar. And then anyone could always reach out to me to really learn how to do that. Or you can, I teach a lot of strategies and all of this stuff, how to buy, how to get your business exit ready on the Substack. That's Buy, Build, Exit, with Roy Red on Substack. But that was this book, because when I reach out to a business owner who's ready to sell, if they don't end up selling to me, I still want to bring value. I want to put so much goodwill into the marketplace that people start to talk about, man, he just helped me out. Like I helped one of my friends launch his book and he was able to sell his company. I just helped him for free, right? And goodwill always comes back to you. And you know what, Hyundai? We always want people to pay us for helping them. You know the yeah. best way to show someone you can help them? By actually helping them, right?
Exactly.
The best way to show someone you can help them is by actually helping them. And the next time you say, all right, I can help you. Here's a good close too, is you could tell someone, I'll always help you for free. As long as I have time. And then just help them when you can and always be busy. And then if they really need the help and you're busy, say, you know what? I'm busy, but if you pay me this much, I'll stop what I'm doing and get it done. So that's one of the nice ways to close. But Built to Exit teaches you how to sell and buy businesses for top dollar.
Excellent. And you said earlier one of your books sold really well in India. Where can people buy your books?
Amazon, or anywhere you buy books. You can Google my name, Roy Red Books, and they'll all come up. I published them through Amazon, but then Amazon publishes them everywhere, Barnes and Nobles, different libraries. And you could also get the Kindle version. And I'm one of the ones is I want the information to be out there. I do want to make a lot of money, but I want more impact than money. I have a goal of impacting and helping 1 billion people live better lives or improve their business. So if I'm going to reach 1 billion people, I need to teach people how to teach people. And I also need to put out a lot of things for free. And so my books are $10, you know, that Kindles sometimes could be anywhere from $1 to $3. But, you know, write a review just to keep me going. Let me know that it helped you. But, or you could hit me up on Substack or Instagram at Roy_Red, R-E-D-D, and I'll send it to you. I'll send you a book, right? Mm-hmm. And you know what's cool about a book too, Hende? Your book is your business card. So here's ways you can sell your product if you got a book. Let's say you're traveling and you're talking to someone, they're like, oh, you got a business card? You go, no, but here, take my book. It's a bestseller. And then you can sign it and give it to them. They're like, oh. And what do people do with business cards? They get a business card and they're like, they throw it away, right? But nobody's going to throw away a book that's valuable. And then you're on their bookshelf or you're on their nightstand. And every time they see that book, they think of you. Another way, Hende, is you can write a best-selling book like Built to Exit. I can send that book to people and say, oh, here's my book. Here it is as a gift. If you want to get on the call, cool. The book is a really good lead generator just to bring people into your system. And it's also a good positioning tool to position you as the expert or authority or the person they should go to when they're ready to buy, sell, or buy whatever products you're selling.
Most definitely. And what's your, outside of the US, obviously, what's your biggest market for your books?
Probably India. India. I've had some in Japan, but it seems that the Indians are really hungry for success. They read everything. They grind. They'll do outreach. They'll even hack your stuff. They're in sending emails, hacking your stuff. But and I've done well in Dubai as well. I think I'll be going to Dubai to speak at a major event this year. It isn't locked in yet, but most likely Dubai is really good.
So in general, they eat in up your stuff.
Yeah. They just want to learn. And when you don't have money, you want high level information for as cheap as you can get it, you know, until you can take the money to then go buy the higher level information. But, that's essentially, India, America, a little bit in Japan. The Middle East as well.
Okay. I want to go back to what you said about, what you were saying about integrity.
Yes.
Do you think as humans we're born, cause you said integrity has to do with like being whole, right? So do you think as humans we're born that way? And then as time goes along, we kind of like either maintain that and break that or break it down. Or do you think integrity is something you build towards as you grow in life?
I think we're born perfect. And then we mess that up because, you know, our parents do the best they can. But if you look at a child, look how pure they are. Look how much energy. Look how they are ready to try. Some people just won't even try, man. A kid will try something that isn't even real with all of their energy, like it's the last thing they're gonna do ever. Kids are pure. They just came from God. They're pure, and they just get beat down through experiences and people and things over time. But if they're through grace, hopefully they just have good parents, right? And hopefully they learn this stuff and something turns them to where they get back to their childlike. And the Bible does say you have to learn to be like a child in order to enter into the kingdom. And so, I think children are perfect and then they just kind of get beat down by life. And just hopefully at some point they get back to that childlike spirit.
Mm-hmm. And then now integrity in the world of business. I mean, in my short time in business, I've seen some things that go against, you know, what it means to have integrity. So I want to hear from you. Have you experienced things like that? Or like, have you ever been burned in business? Yeah. Can you touch on that?
I haven't been burned really, really bad. I've had some of my friends be burned where they bought multiple companies and then their chairman just kicked them out of the company somehow and took away their $1 million assets. Trust is huge, but this is where the mental side comes in. You need to you need to get to the point where you can tell you can't trust someone. Yeah. You need to trust them to be them. You got to be able to read people. If a guy can't even be faithful to his wife, why would you trust him in business? To look at people's integrity. When they say they're going to do something, are they doing it? When you really get around high performers, they do a lot. And they always follow up. They always do what they say they're going to do. My mentor at one time said he was going to be somewhere and then he got in an accident and he showed up in a wheelchair. And they were like, dude, what happened? He's like, oh, I got in an accident, but I said I would be here. That's a level of integrity that's crazy. But there's two things, and I don't want to get them mixed up. Integrity is just doing what you say you're going to do. If that doesn't necessarily have to be good, there's bad people with high levels of integrity because they say they're going to. Yes, there's some really high performing evil people out there. There really is. And then morality floats in the wind. Something that me or you think isn't moral and we would never do, somebody else might do it and they don't think it's bad. And that's something I haven't quite figured out, is if they don't think it's bad at all, is there any karmic retribution for that? You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Cause they literally think it's okay to do these things that I would think is dirty. And so morality floats in the wind, but you always want to watch people, keep your eyes on people, look at their integrity level and make sure you place them in a place to where you can trust them to be them. Like you can look at them and be like, I don't know about you, but I'm still going to be cordial and then just deal with you how I have to deal with you ongoing. But just be careful with giving someone your trust that ends up doing you dirty.
I know I heard this saying. I can't remember exactly where I heard it, but they said how you do anything is how you do everything.
How you do one thing is how you do everything. Yeah.
No, that's yeah, and that's a lot of what I'm getting from you today.
No, that's why a lot of people who are fit, I get trust really fast in business because people go, if he would take care of himself to that level, if he just takes care of me to a fraction of that, that would be amazing. You know?
Yeah. And my last question for you today is, do you think, you kind of alluded to it just now, but do you think you have to be a good person to be able to do good business? I mean, defining a good person is a little great, but I think you get what I mean.
So morality floats in the wind. What is a good person? What is a good person? And we've seen a lot of these top high performing guys do really, really evil things recently that's coming out. I know we like to think that good people will inherit the earth. The Bible does says that he takes from the wicked and gives to the righteous.
There.
I'm going to say, yes, if you do good things, that you will win in business, but sometimes it just takes more time to win. It takes longer when you do it legit. The success comes shorter. It can come faster when you go against your morals, when you go against or do things that are bad, but it won't last. And eventually, those people who did their work righteously over time, for years, this could take years, eventually, we'll always win.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that as well. And I couldn't have wrapped it up better myself.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another great edition of Business with Roy. Today felt a little more spiritual than our last episodes.
Sure.
But it's still some gems. Hopefully the audience will keep enjoying what we've been giving to them, and look forward to seeing you guys next week and we're giving you some more great insights and knowledge that you can use in life and in business.
And send in some questions. If you wonder about something, want to know about something, send them in.
Yeah. We'll start collecting fan questions as well. Have you answer those in the coming weeks. Before I let you go, who are you rooting for in the Super Bowl?
I am rooting for the Seattle Seahawks, but the Patriots are going to win. They're the underdogs too, so I don't know if you're a betting man. The Patriots are going to win.
You think so?
I want to say this. There's a gentleman named Josh McDaniels who was caught cheating years ago. Who will record your practice, and he knew everything you were going to do. Guess who the Patriots offensive coordinator is? Josh.
And Josh. Yeah. I don't know. I think the Seahawks defense will be too much for Drake and Josh.
It might be rough. It might be a low scoring game, but if Drake knows the answers to the test, exactly what they're running, what they're hiding, their schemes, then might be, cause he's not a great talent. If you watch the games, he's just making everything as a perfect read. And where do you think that's coming from?
True.
You know?
But we'll see. Next time I speak to you, we'll see which one of us got it right.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back same time, same place next week. We'll see you next time.
Peace.